the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site, with my co-host, Seth Cox, from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And oh my gosh, you know, it's rare that we have news hit in a timely manner that we can talk about it on the show, like same day. And I wish we didn't have to do it, because this episode, episode 414, this is about the bad stuff. And the Cardinals, over the last more than a year, have been just, it's like hit after hit after hit, and this is bad. We'll talk about this Terry McDonough, Michael Bidwill. There's nothing good about this. So yeah, the bulk of the show is about the scandal, this cloud hanging over this franchise, this organization, and then we'll do a little talk about DeAndre Hopkins, because you know this overshadows everything, Seth. What are we to make of this? We'll go into the details in just a second, but what are we to make of the last 14 months that we've dealt with the Arizona Cardinals?
I think it just goes to a culture aspect of something that you and I've talked about, and it's been trying to like change the culture and the perception of the Arizona Cardinals. And as fans, we tend to get we tend to get territorial, right? Like, oh, well, you can't talk poorly about my team, you know, type of stuff. But the reality seems to be that this team doesn't necessarily deserve that, that kind of grace, right? Like, that they seem to be willing to put themselves in positions to have this kind of turmoil and have this kind of negativity brought on them. And apparently a lot of it was happening and almost operating as like well known. And people might say, you know, well, what are you talking about? But like, the response to the allegations were almost as damning and inflammatory as the allegations themselves. Like, why would you want a person like that in your organization, especially near the top of your organization, making decisions and being a part of the, you know, what we would call the executive team? Like, why would you want a person with that many issues in that position? And now it's almost like the chickens are coming home to roost from that mistake, right? Of like allowing Terry McDonough to be a part of this organization for as long as they did, maybe trying to operate in good faith, you know, maybe trying to allow him to work through his personal issues. But I think the combination of the two is where the concern and you know, where the trouble lies in general, because as you and I talked about off the air, how were you letting somebody that you've had this many concerns and or disciplinary issues continue to operate within your organization?
Yeah. So what this stems from is, and it was reported by The Athletic and also ESPN's Adam Schefter, is that a former Arizona Cardinals executive, Terry McDonough, who at one point was the number two to Steve Keim. He was the one that became the number two after Jason Light left to become GM of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And he was the vice president of player personnel. And then he even had, he was a finalist for the GM interview in 2017 with, for the San Francisco 49ers. And then by 2019, he disappeared. Now, he was still on the team. So he was still part of the front office as a senior executive. And if we're going to look at kind of the timeline, is that now he has allegations. Oh, man. It's just, let's try to put this together, because he filed an arbitration demand with the NFL accusing Michael Bidwill of demoting McDonough after he objected to to some scheme to circumvent a suspension of Steve Keim. Let's go through the details of stars. Now, if we remember back in 2018, the night of July 4th, I remember I was visiting, I was in Southern Utah with my family, visiting my in-laws, and it was up super early. I think it was either July 4th or July 5th. And there was the news that Steve Keim was arrested for DUI. That
not ideal.
No, that was that, you know, honestly, since 2018 is things had just kind of been spiraling. That was a whole thing. They suspended him. The Cardinals reacted what we probably responded with, what we would consider appropriate and swift. And they, 2 weeks later, within 2 weeks, the Cardinals come out and announce that Keim had been suspended. 5 weeks, $200,000 fine. Bidwill said that, you know, he believed that at that point it was the largest fine and longest suspension for in the NFL previously for a DUI offense. What's important to note that this was a team discipline, a team sentenced discipline. It did not come from the league. It came from Bidwill himself. Time-wise, it was in the middle of July, right before training camp, and so for the 5 weeks he was out, it was going to cover the entirety of training camp and the first half of the preseason. Go for it. What are you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, let me ask you this. So the Cardinals handed out their own discipline. You know, like you said, this did not come from the league. Do you think that was done in order to maybe not circumvent's probably the right or wrong word, but like, you know, preclude the league from maybe doing any more or looking into any more of
it's possible
the ongoings of the front office?
You know, I think that's probably fair is to that.
I mean, and it's obviously hindsight now, like looking at everything we know.
I don't know if it was necessarily, you know, malevolent or like there were any bad,
but like we're finding
under undertones, but you know,
we're finding out that McDonough and Keim were really close. Right. And obviously we know Bidwill and Keim were really close. So like that, they were all together or, you know, things like that, like where, you know, maybe there was more, obviously only one person got caught driving drunk, but you know, there was more like, this was a consistent thing that they were doing type stuff. So it's like, hey, we'll take care of this. Like, Steve, you're suspended. Like, let's get ahead of this, so to speak. So nothing comes, you know, like nothing comes home with this basically.
Yeah, and how it happened, so the timeline of this is that, you know, part of the suspension was he was not to have contact with the team. McDonough claims that there was a burner scheme, a phone, like that McDonough was provided with a burner phone, that were burner phones used to communicate with Keim during the suspension, because it's that kind of part of the offseason, and that, you know, during the preseason, that McDonough approached Bidwill and said that he and then coach Steve Wilks came out and said, you know, no, we're not okay with this. We're not okay with this. I'm not comfortable cheating. We don't need to cheat to succeed in the preseason. And And from that, it led to Bidwell supposedly demote and harass McDonough ever since. He was, what does it say in the report? Is that he received illegal and retaliatory mistreatment and abuse from Bidwell after McDonough voiced objection for the burner broom scheme, which violated the rules set forth in King Kime's suspension. And basically, yeah. And then in addition to that, it was more than just that. He was apparently demoted twice. Okay. So the demotion came in 2019. He went from like second in command to seventh in command. And then there was another demotion with a pay cut down to $220,000. And like that's, we're talking significant money, more money than, you know, apparently when he was the VP of personnel, the player personnel, he was making $550,000. He was demoted, down to, and he paid $330,000, and then he took another cut as well in 2022. And then this year, this is what the team responded with, is that the team informed him after Monty Austinfort was hired, that they were not going to renew his contract, that he was going to be let go after that. But it also alleges a number of things of inappropriate and, you know, hostile type work environment for that. But that's, I don't know. It just feels like the overall thoughts with all this for me is I don't know what to think, especially as what the Cardinals react. Because the Cardinals then, they had to, like, they must have known this filing was coming because they had a PR guy, the spokesperson, and they had basically a dossier full of stuff that they had on McDonough and his erratic behavior, his insubordinate behavior, problems and conflicts, verbally abusive with employees, insubordinate, absent, not following through on things. And I don't know about all this. I don't know which side to take, if there is a side to be had, because it sounds like McDonough was an awful person to work with. And at the same time, this, like, we know that there's problems in the organization, but with confirmations from people we know who have worked with the team, that there is a level of toxicity in terms of leadership and the way things are run that it's hard to avoid.
Yeah, and I think that's my biggest thing that we've seen in this whole thing is, like, you know, I don't like necessarily the Cardinals going on the offensive, so to speak, with their basically, you know, discrediting of McDonough because of the type of man and person he is. Because again, that goes back to, well, you guys were employing him the entire time.
And it sounds like for years they were, like, there were problems and they continued to employ him. And so while on one level, at one level, it says they tried to accommodate him. So here's the thing that it says from the team. And we already mentioned how that they said he would not be renewed, though apparently they would honor his contract for the remaining more than a year. So he had more than a year left on his contract. So sometime in 2024, he would have disappeared from the organization, and they would support his endeavor to continue.
And apparently that's what caused him to...
It appears so, that when they said, we're not renewing your contract, that's when he said, all right, we're going to go all scorched earth. And this is our position, which consists with many efforts we've made to accommodate Terry during his time with the team, despite difficulties in his personal life and his often volatile demeanor towards colleagues. And he talks about, you know, how this is kind of a scheme. apparently starting in at least 2019, which I don't know if it led to his demotion or was the result of his demotion. According to the team, he would consistently record interactions with colleagues, and apparently he was having problems in his family life. The team alleges that there was evidence now, as they did a file review, that there was evidence of domestic abuse. That's low. Like, to bring that out in this, like, report it to the league or whatever.
My thing is, they talk about his, you know, alcohol use. They talk about his domestic violent, like, and again, you kept this guy on. Like, I'm not condoning if any or all of that is true. I'm not condoning what Terry McDonough did. But you kept him on. Like, you continued to employ him, pay him an exorbitant salary, and leave him in a position of power for years. So, like, you don't look good in this situation going, well, you know, we were trying to help him.
It honestly feels like? It feels like they were both playing a game of chicken against each other.
It really does. It was almost like...
They knew that he was probably building something up against them, and so they had something ready. And maybe part of that, there was kind of this agreement to say, hey, because they moved him to, okay, you'd evaluate players. We're just not going to have you work. You're not going to be in the room with us anymore because you're hard to work with. So you keep evaluating players. We'll keep you on the team because we appreciate what you've done in the past, but we're hitting a point, and you know that he's brought things up, or they feel guilty that there's been things that haven't been handled correctly, and they know that he could bring things up. So it's almost a blackmail extortion type thing. And so they're building it, so they have this dossier. They have this file of just documentation after documentation after documentation. It's like they both knew someone was going to file for divorce at some point, and so both spouses are both documenting every little thing. And that's what, and so once McDonough, he files for that divorce, I guess what it was is that the Cardinals, the team advises him, hey, we're divorcing. And so McDonough brings out his, this is my evidence. And then the Cardinals coming back, this is our evidence against you. What in the world? What in the world? I don't know. This is so messy.
It's almost like mutually assured destruction, right? Like, they like you said, they both knew.
It was hush money almost.
Yeah.
And so they were paying him hush money job because they didn't want stuff to come out. But they also were building up, their leverage against him. Ah.
Yeah, it's just, genuinely don't even know what to make of it. Like, it's just such an asinine situation for an NFL franchise to be. Like,
absolutely.
Why are you even in that situation? You know, and then it was something that caught our attention. I don't remember who said it, and who brought it up, but like it ended up prompting the Cardinals to have to hire or like create an HR division. And like
that's part of the arbitration claim. The part of the arbitration claim is that there was an employee survey put out, and that Bidwill didn't like the results, so he canceled it. Well, the team came back and said, no, actually, he got the results, and we acted swiftly on that. And that's when they barely, like, just, you know, after 2019 is when they finally had an HR department.
Right. And it's like, It's like, so what was going on before? And so, like, to hear ex-employees, and we're not going to, like, you know, we have not spoken to any of these people. Like, I don't want to say that these are on the record.
We definitely don't have things on the record, other but than there are a couple of former employees who on social media made it clear that, okay, legit. But and maybe we maybe honestly, I kind of would like personally to be able to carefully and judiciously, if any of these people that I know, talk to them, get their story out, tell it from their point of view without necessarily naming names or going scorched earth. But because what we're hearing is that this organization, which didn't have a good reputation before, but at least under Michael's father, there were some good to it. The bad reputation was on the football side.
Right. It was always about how cheap they were.
Yes.
How they didn't care or didn't treat the players the way
that was just the football side of things. And since Michael took over, the narrative has been how much better things have been. But the last year of scandal, of this and that, it's really taken a toll on it. But let's...
Well, that's what is so sad about this whole thing, right? Is like you said, like, it felt like he was creating this, like, hey, I'm not my dad. Like, I'll create a team and an environment that people will want to play under and that can be successful. And like you said, that seems to be happening at a higher clip, right? Like, that's happening at a better clip. But instead, it's now a toxic work environment. Like, it's like you traded one problem
for a bigger one, for a bigger societal type ginormous problem.
Right. For a problem that you shouldn't ever have. Like, this shouldn't be something that you have to worry about. And like I said, I'm like, obviously you and I, you know, work in different fields, but like, we've been employed for a long time. Can you imagine, like, your work and not having an HR department?
Yeah, that would never happen.
Like, you're like, wait, so if I have a problem, who do I go to?
You go to the boss, apparently.
Right. You're like, you can just come to me. It's not a big deal.
I've got a problem with you.
Yeah.
So I got to come to you.
Right. So it's just, it's just such a baffling situation, man. And like, holy cow. Like, I just don't know what to make of it, because it's just, like we said, it just seems so unbelievable almost, right? Like, it's just like an unbelievable situation.
Absolutely. It is. It's crazy. This is worse than any weird movie. But anyway, coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk. Let's talk a little bit more, but we'll talk specifically some thoughts we have on the burner phone part, which is what got the big part of the news, because that's the cheating part. And I have a conspiracy theory. But, you know, just hear me out. That's coming up next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. What these stories, both the one from ESPN and The Athletic, both their stories led with the cell phone scheme, this burner phone scheme. And my first reaction to this is, I don't understand, like, of all the things that's being alleged, I don't understand the cell phone thing in the least, because this was not a league suspension. This was a suspension that was levied by Bidwill. Kime is suspended 5 weeks. He can't have contact with the team. And yet McDonough would like to suggest that Bidwill was either behind or agreed to circumvent that suspension by using burner phones to contact Keim during the 5-week suspension. Now, granted, this was Steve Wilkes' first coaching job, his first year as head coach. He's a rookie head coach.
And remember, that was, I mean, not the burner phone part, but that was a huge portion of Wilkes' lawsuit against the Arizona Cardinals, was that part of his belief that he was unfairly or unjustly fired was that he did not have the normal support of a normal offseason and general manager, because his general manager was suspended for
all of training camp. And so when he got fired, but he was given he wasn't getting a fair shake, essentially, is what he said. But to me, it just seems so, like, why would Bidwell levy a suspension in that fashion and then undermine his own suspension?
To try to, circumvent it.
To try to circumvent that when it's just preseason training camp and the big roster decisions weren't going to happen unless they just really were. Well, and so what this comes to is supposedly that during, let me find the accusation, where it says that he, let me see, Burnfully communicated, basically completes, breach of contract, reporting, complaint, maybe it's on the ESPN one. The filing said that the day after McDonough told Bidwell neither he nor Wilkes wanted to communicate, I don't want to talk to Keim. I don't want to do it. That neither he nor Wilkes wanted to communicate with Keim during the suspension, Bidwell summoned him into his office and wrote him up for subordination.
But, I mean, this goes back to the question. Why would this not have been brought up by Wilkes if this was a thing? Like, would
that too, because if that's misconduct,
part of his lawsuit, like, think about like Brian Flores, right? And one of the things Brian Flores alleged was that he was instructed to lose games, to tank, right? Like, why would he not bring that up if it was a real, and I'm not, I guess I can't say real thing, because that's a harsh thing, but it just seems, like you said, it just seems far-fetched to see that, Michael Bidwell would hand down something and then,
and almost immediately, because the suspension was announced July 17th. This is what the complaint says. On July 23rd, McDonough approached Bidwell on the field after practice and told him that he and Wilkes were not comfortable speaking and that they could fine handle the 5-week suspension in Keim's absence. The Cardinals did not need to cheat to have a successful preseason. The complaint states Bidwell stopped McDonough and started screaming at him at a loud, accusing McDonough of subordination and telling McDonough they didn't. So this is a port. This apparently happened on the field. On the field, McDonough was summoned to his office and he was written up. And this was 6 days, like less than a week. So like if this was some conspiracy, if like some burner phone, like this is like a lame duck suspension, then it was Bidwell talking publicly. And I can't remember if I was there because it was or if I was just there the week later from training camp, where he was very public. We were swift. We were decisive. You know, he suspended and then apparently immediately said, hey, here's these phones. You can, talk to Steve on the down low.
Right. And again, like, I just, that portion of it doesn't make sense. And then to top it all off, then, they ended up with the first pick in the draft that year and everything. So, like, they cheated and they did it incredibly
Right, right. I do want to give you my conspiracy theory. This, no, I'm going to tell you I have no basis for this other than...
You have given us the idea that it's a conspiracy theory, so at that point you're off the hook. If people take it seriously, it's
so
not on you.
I'm just connecting some dots because based on what... So it feels like that McDonough is not completely stable, you know, that he's got an axe to grind. So you can either go with the conspiracy that Bidwill was really trying to low-key not suspend Steve Keim. So it was just for fake. But let me go with this, because either McDonough, this is my conspiracy, that McDonough was behind, like McDonough was trying to find ways to create leverage against the team, trying to build up dirt against the team. Maybe he knew, I'll preface this, is that
eventually it was going to come down,
all the stuff that's been the problem. There was this thing, so when the 49ers were interviewing McDonough, there was a report on Niners Nation by one of the staff there who did, I don't know how credible the reporting was, like what type of sources, but this writer for Niners Nation, who's the SB Nation's like Seth's network, SB Nation, and back in that time, it was not long after I was part of SB Nation as well, but that the 49ers should be wary of McDonough because the report was that, let me read it. It was that McDonough has been called hard to deal with and not a good guy, so much that Arizona started a positive campaign over the last season just to get him out of the building. So dating back to like 2016, 2017. And I remember that now. It's say that basically they were trying to promote him to get him out of the franchise because he was hard to work with. And it sounds like, because some of the things that the team has come out in their statement, their retaliatory statement about what's happened, is there is some really unstable stuff. So let's roll with this, my theory. Maybe, if not he was involved, that McDonough was the one who tried to get the contact. It wasn't Bidwill, but rather it was McDonough that tried to set up the communication with Keim. And there's a couple of things to go with this. One, according to the team, during the suspension, Bidwill wanted to be present for meetings, for the executive meetings, the general manager type things, the personnel meetings, while Keim was out. McDonough flipped out about that. Okay? And note the reaction that McDonough alleges when he approaches Bidwill on the field about the burner phones. So here's a conspiracy theory that I can believe. I'm not going to say that it is. I'm not saying this, but this is that McDonough perpetrated this scheme. He was the one that did the burner phones to create contact with Keim during his suspension. And when that Bidwill allegedly blew up at him, so rather than McDonough telling Bidwill that it was, I'm not comfortable, I'm not, like, we don't need to do this. If McDonough was behind it and Bidwill didn't know, what do you think his reaction would have been on the field?
Right.
It would have been a blow up like that. So either McDonough was saying, hey, I'm going to tell people about this burner phone thing, or I did this burner phone thing. We've been cheating, and Bidwill blew up at him. And because the team alleges that it was some executive, he did not name the executive, who did it. And as soon as Bidwill heard about it, he nipped it in the bud. Mike Jarecki, he said he can confirm that there was communication with Keim during the suspension. So there was something that happened, whether were burner phones, but it feels like, here's my conspiracy, is the fact that maybe McDonough was behind it all to try and bring the organization down, or to try to leverage something against the team.
And quite frankly, we always assumed they had contact with Keim. Like, we you know, would never be shocked to find that out. But the whole burner phone thing, like I said, I have two thoughts about it. The first one being like, I feel like Steve Wilks would have been like, hey guys, this is what's going on, right? Like, this is a guy that, you know, again, feels like he did not get a fair shake. He would have come out with...
Right. Which lends itself... Wilks didn't know about. This was a McDonough. I think McDonough was this whole thing.
Like, right. So that's what I was going to say. Either one, this was proposed. They truly did say no. And then McDonough went back and said, okay, I'll do it. You know, just don't tell Steve. He doesn't want to be involved or something like that. Which, you know, again, that's hard to believe, but maybe it happened. Or two, like you said... This was Terry McDonough just creating something that way he had, like you said, some dirt or something on these guys. And it's just,
especially like if he knew that the team knew potentially of some issues that he was having at home.
Well, and again, I go back to that. Like, you know, I truly am truly dumbfounded that the Cardinals released all of that information thinking that it was going to negatively impact Terry McDonough. And to me, it was more like, you guys knowingly employed a monster for years and didn't do anything about it.
Right. And we always thought, so remember, I remember when McDonough disappeared. This all happened in 2019, which was timeline time, was when Patrick Peterson received his PED suspension and then had some beef with the front office that we never knew about exactly. There was something that happened with the front office. He has his little mini holdout in offseason workouts and OTAs. McDonough's demoted. Peterson comes back, seems to save face. He's apologetic for what happened. It always felt that McDonough had something to do with that. We knew it was contract related. Another thing is that, this is the funny one, is that, what was that? That he also leaked to certain media members, and guess what? We know that's not local media. No one leaks anything to our local media here, national media. And so we also discovered that he had secretly conveyed private personnel documents, description of private meetings, and other confidential information to selected media, all with the purpose of aiming criticism as his colleagues to benefit himself. This is all in violation of our guideline and mutual trust in our workplace. Doesn't that feel a little bit... The Kyler stuff.
I was going to say, is he the guy that's been leaking all the Kyler
stuff? The Kyler stuff. That's got to be it. Because private personnel documents, some of the quotes that for example, that Chris Mortensen said, wouldn't those come from personnel documents?
Right. Yeah, and so you just look at it, and again, this just, I mean, nobody looks good in this situation. Nobody, because you're basically saying like, yeah, we employed a monster for, you know, however long he was here. And like, we let him until he went after the wrong guy. Right. Then he went after Mike and then it was too much. Oh, yeah. And then we got to deal with him. And that's, I mean, I'm sorry, man. That just screams a toxic organization where they allow these guys to operate unchecked until it comes back on them, and then it's like, oh, we've got to deal with this guy, he's out of control,
right?
And it's like, all right, so you let it go on, you know, forever, and now it's too much. Like, now that it's taking aim at you, it's too much.
Coming up next on the Rise of Sierra podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk in the web. Let's look at the other accusations and some other stuff that we've heard about the organization. That's coming up next on Rise of Sierra. back on the Rise Up Syriot podcast, by Sir Cardinals Talk on the web. The other part of this arbitration filing. Now, obviously, they led with the cheating scandal, with the burner phone scandal, but then it delves into the part which seems to be problematic throughout organizations throughout the entire United States. And it's as a culture shift, and there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with it, but it sounds like that is that talking about not only did Bidwill mistreat McDonough, that he also mistreated people within the organization and suggested that it was that it has to do with gender and race and ethnicity. McDonough said in his filing that he had treated a black employee and two pregnant women poorly and created an environment of fear for minority employees, even mentioning specifically that Bidwill reduced two pregnant women, 1 5 months and 1 7 months, to tears after screaming at them with abusive and bullying mistreatment. And then many employees who responded to the survey. Then there was the 2019. They decided to conduct an employee engagement survey to see Bidwill intercept. Many of the employees who responded to the survey indicated they were fearful of Bidwill on a daily basis as a result of Bidwill's erratic and often abusive interactions with them. Oh, and then said that his workplace misconduct is significantly worse than Phoenix Suns' previous owner, Robert Sarver, who ultimately was suspended for a year and fined $10 million before he sold the franchise. Yeah. This is the hard one. This is the very difficult one to swallow.
Well, I think the first thing we have to acknowledge is that you have to remember that Terry McDonough and his brother were, you know, or Terry
Ryan McDonough was
brother,
the Ryan was McDonough the GM by of the Suns
of the Suns, and
McDonough also was part of the accusations, part of it in part. Of some of the accusations against Sarver.
And so that basis is obviously you know, something that he would at least have some knowledge of. However, it does sound a little over the top, and I'm not, you know, discounting anybody's, you know, what they've dealt with, because you and I weren't there. We have not been there. We've never dealt with that. So, you know, we wouldn't know. That being said, like we talked about a little bit earlier, you know, people like Kyle Odegaard, people like Felipe Lopez, people
Felipe
like
Corral.
Oh, Felipe Corral, excuse me.
And, junior.
Junior.
Not the news reporter for Telemundo's sports here in Phoenix, his son.
Yeah. Who and Lisa Matthews, all who worked for the Arizona Cardinals. They did not say if they had the experience, but they did say
Felipe did on social media.
Okay.
In responding to, okay. He himself said the mistreatment that he dealt with. Okay. So this is on the record. He said this is in response to someone on social media. I can almost guarantee you there's over 50 plus former employees who can corroborate any info. I was there for 4.5 years, and the mistreatment I went through doesn't compare to what some women went through.
And so, you know, Kyle and Lisa both basically, to an extent,
they said, oh, they felt bad for the people working in that environment.
Right. Still working in that environment, I think is how they phrased it, if I remember right. So, I mean, you look at it, it is clearly something that is wrong within the organization. But I go back to what I've been saying. That is now not a surprise when you allowed a person with all of the issues that Terry McDonough apparently had for years to be a high-ranking executive within that organization and kind of do it unchecked. Like, should we be surprised that the organization that employed Terry McDonough and knowingly had all of this arsenal at the ready, like you said, basically a dossier of problems that he had personally at the ready, should we be surprised that there's a toxic culture and work environment going on there? I mean, at that point, once that's known, you're kind of like, oh, that all makes sense, right? Like, I can see that, because basically you've said that there's nothing that we deem reprehensible about a person because we're allowing them to behave in this way without any repercussions. And like I said, the crazy thing to me is it seems like, and again, this is our conspiracy theory, but it seems like it was not until he went after Michael Bidwill that McDonough then had anything to do, right? Like with being disciplined.
Yeah. People I know that the interactions with people I've had within the media side of things, from what I understand, they did not personally, for the most part, experience that. But both people I spoke to who responded to me said they weren't shocked by any of this. They weren't like, one was, yeah, it's bad. And another said, it didn't shock me. And so it doesn't sound like it's completely widespread, that there are some people who avoid that. Yeah, it's just tough. And especially we're now in a place in society where it's hard to defend yourself against that. Even if it is whatever is considered toxic, you know, perhaps Bidwill was angry, yelling or being very angry and upset with a couple of pregnant women. That doesn't ever look good. We're now at a place in society in the workplace, probably a better place, and should, honestly, it is a better place, so that we don't have to worry about verbal abuse in our jobs. But I want to be sensitive to the fact that sometimes there are reasons in the workplace to be upset. Should it be berating anger? No. But are there times in the workplace where performance leads one to be told things that you don't want to hear, and that could cause someone to break down? It very well could be. And no, I don't want to suggest that, especially when they are naming, when they're saying things that are dealing with gender and with ethnicity, we're gonna assume that most people are good employees. That's not always in the case. But I don't know. Like, this is just such a nuanced and difficult thing to maneuver, because you, like, how bad is it? Like, who's affected? And people, and a couple of people I know was even like, is willing to kind of talk about it privately, but and isn't necessarily, is thinking about, well, what would be repercussions about speaking publicly about some of the stuff that they know? That's weird stuff. Like, you're now dealing into, you know, big money and hiding things and all things like that, right?
Yeah, stuff above my pay grade. You know, and that's the thing is, like, all we can talk about from this perspective is what we have experienced firsthand, and then what we know firsthand from others, you know, saying what their experience was. And we know for a fact that, you know, the Cardinals have employed a lot of the same people for a long time.
There's a lot of turnover in the lower.
The lower.
But leadership does stay generally the same.
And so typically what happens with that is that, and this isn't always the case, and this is, again, you know, just kind of throwing stuff at the wall. Typically that happens because places aren't good to work at. Like, typically you don't continue to employ the same executives and turn over the people that are doing the actual day-to-day stuff, unless things are untenable, I guess is the best way to say it. You know, like, and so the other thing is there is a power dynamic of the reality is that there's a lot of people that control the ability to get jobs in the NFL. And Michael Bidwill is one of those people that can kind of make or break that chance. And so, you know, when people say, well, why hasn't this been talked about, or why didn't, well, if you're just a media member, you know, who happens to get an opportunity to work for the Arizona Cardinals, you have to remember most of the time these guys aren't Cardinals fans in the first spot, right? So they have no care or anything. So they're not going to ruffle feathers. They're not going to do anything like that. They're straight up just trying to get to their next chance and job. And so if they have bad experiences and or feel like it's not a great work environment, they're not going to complain about it. They're just going to go take the next job that's available. And we've seen that with basically all of those media members, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so, like, it's not surprising to me that it would take a scorned lover, so to speak, for all of this to come out. And then people are like, well, yeah, it happened, but I wasn't going to be the one to bring it up. Like, I was a $45,000 a year employee trying to get to a $60,000 a year employee, covering something I love in football. I wasn't about to burn a potential bridge. Like, all of that makes sense to me. I'm not saying that it's right or that they should feel that way, but, like, that all makes sense because that's just kind of how it goes.
Yeah. It just, the whole situation for me, it just makes it really sad. You know, we're both fans, but this is the team I grew up loving. And you know me, I've been guilty of unnecessary optimism that there's a lot of stuff I've defended the franchise for, but this is really hard. It's really hard. And it's partially believable. Like, this the thing is that it's not like you can't dismiss it. You can't just dismiss it, because it's not like when you are of the age that Bidwill is, so the time that he grew up, and he for a long time had no, basically, you know, kind of like the Jerry Jones in Dallas, is that he kind of has been able to do whatever he wants. So if things don't go his way, if he's never had anyone to check him. And he grew up at a time in a culture, like, It's me, you a little less so. You're a little much younger than I am. But, you know, growing up where the idea is push, 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 especially when it comes to corporate, when it comes to anything competitive in sports, you push, you push, you push, you push. And if your performance isn't up to snuff, you will be pushed and you'll be uncomfortable for you. And so motivation, like the way coaches coach, heck, like how do players get the coaches get in, get give players an earful? It's not unlike the sports world for players when coaches are like from the outsider abusive to players, but it's part of the culture. They're not that good or bad, but at the same time, is it excessive? Like, so is that toxic? In today's society, it kind of is.
Yeah, and that's what it comes down to is like, you know, and that's what you and I kind of talked about off the air is like the reality becomes whether or not we agree or would have had issues with something or both or whatever, that is 100% the standard now. And so that is how you have to judge all of this, right? Like you have to look at it from that perspective of like, oh, this is something that is untenable and that's something that shouldn't be happening. And that matters. And whether or not you agree with it doesn't matter. And that's just, I mean, that's just where we're at now. And so, and like you said, it's for the better. Like we're trying to make things better. We're trying to get us into a position where, you know, work environments are healthy and things like that. And, you know, everybody tries to create an atmosphere of wanting to be there and wanting to work there. And that's, you know, obviously not happening. And so, you know, it just becomes tough, to see that this is happening kind of, like you said, for the team that we follow and root for, because it just makes it hard. If you're talking about a bad or toxic place, it's hard to be want to cheer or root for that, right? Like even if you're saying to yourself, oh well, you know, they're trying to make it better, or they're working to get it better, like that's not ideal or an ideal way to go about it.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Spirit podcast, Mr. Cardinals Stuck in the Bed, we're going to move away from that and talk a little bit about DeAndre Hopkins. What's new with that? That's coming up next on Rise Up Spirit. We're back on the Rise Up Spirit podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. We still can't get rid of the DeAndre Hopkins talk. He's not betrayed, but apparently, no, it's not really that. The Cardinals wouldn't release him, would they? That's what teams are apparently waiting for now, according to Albert Breer. Now, the initial report, when it was presented, it came across in his mailbag. Someone asked, he gave an answer in his column. And then people said on Twitter and said, according to Albert Breer, the Cardinals could release DeAndre Hopkins. That's not what Breer said. What Breer said was that part of the reason why things are slow is that there are teams who think the Cardinals could release Hopkins.
There are teams that hope the Arizona Cardinals will release Hopkins. And, you know, I don't know if it was you. I don't know if it was Blake. I don't know if it's Johnny. I don't remember who tweeted it. But basically, remember, like, that floated similar to what the Raiders did with Rodney Hudson.
That was Johnny. That was what Johnny said. He's no. It's important to note is that it was floated out there that Hudson was going to be released, and that prompted a trade. Because
right, and because if you're, let's say the Patriots, and I'm just throwing a team out there, and you're like, well, he's not going to come here to play with Mac Jones over going to
KC to play with Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, with Patrick Mahomes, or going to Chicago to get paid, you know, $28 million a year or whatever. So we should just go ahead and throw a third round. Like, that's not an unthinkable
thing. That's literally what the Cardinals did.
Right. It's not an unthinkable thing. So, you know, it would make sense that maybe it was the Cardinals that floated that, right? Like, hey, you know, maybe we need to do such a thing. So
maybe, you know, yeah. But at the same time, it felt like a way to get the Cardinals, because the Cardinals have been saying, well, what the report has always been is that the Cardinals haven't got come off of their asking price. So this is one of those things where a team goes, I think it's more this than the Cardinals throwing it out there, that teams are going, we'll just wait for him to release him because, you know, the Cardinals aren't going to get that.
Right.
But then I was thinking, wait, like, now first, the Cardinals wouldn't release Hopkins, but would they? I think, I don't know. I don't think they would, but also I think it doesn't actually benefit the Cardinals to then play chicken long enough to where they trade him midseason, because isn't part of the reason why they are motivated to trade him now is because they want to get his cap number completely off the books in this year, because if they trade him midseason, or if they release him and then post June 1st him, they don't need to trade him or release him for cap space. They have sufficient cap space. It's so that he's not on the book next year. If they trade him midseason, then you're going to carry another 11.5 million. You're going to carry another 11 plus million in dead money in 2024 because you traded him after June 1st, and that's the cap reality of it. Hasn't it felt like, and now you would get, you know, you'd get an extra 11 million this year in cap space, but they don't need that. Doesn't it feel like kind of some of the motivation is Austin Fort wants to get him off the book now, so he's off the book next season? This for me, the Tyrann Mathieu, when they cut Tyrann Mathieu, they didn't save hardly any money when they did it. It was so that they saved all the money the next year.
Yeah, and that makes sense, because we've kind of talked about all these 1 and 2 year deals that they're doing and needing to, you know, needing to get ready to clear cap space and reset the cap in general. And that's what we've talked about, is, you know, people get upset about the lack of big moves this offseason, but to us it's always made sense, because they were going to try to fix the books that were so kind of bad, right?
So my question is this: would it be better for them to release him before after the draft if they don't get a trade and have no dead money in 2024? Or to have him play half a season, a full season, and then trade him in the off season and carry another $11 million next year?
I think they'll end up moving him before that, because I really do think that this is just, like you said, a game of chicken for everybody, and they've got to figure out what they're going to do. And right now, it's been tough to... It's been tough to, you know, find a team that's in an off season where teams just straight up aren't making moves. It's tough to expect a team to throw money at that right now.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to sit there and see what plays out in the draft. Like, does Zay Flowers, you know, if you're Kansas City, does Zay Flowers make it to 31? Does Quentin Johnston make it to 31? Okay, they don't. Okay, now we need to reevaluate how we're going to address it. I mean, it was the same thing the Cardinals did, right? The Cardinals ended up going with Marquise Brown because every wide receiver got drafted before they got on the podium. Like, they knew at what, pick 12 when... or 15 when Dotson went, right? That it was like, okay, well, you know, we picking at, you know, 7 or 8 picks, whatever it is, we better get on the horn and make sure that we can get this deal done with Baltimore because we don't have, there's not a wide receiver we can get at this point.
Yeah, it feels like, yeah, ultimately a deal will go down on draft night, wherever that happens, round two, round three, because Hopkins is still really good, let's be honest. But, you know, there is a part of me that said, well, maybe, like, if they didn't get anything for him, that cutting him might be, it wouldn't be better for 2023. No, definitely not. But to have Hopkins in 2023 and then not in 2024 and still carry $11 million in dead money, maybe not having him in 2023 and having a plan to replace him now would be better. I don't know.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's tough, and you know, the whole thing has taken so long. You were hoping it'd be done by now, but like I said, it makes it difficult when teams don't want to, you know, make trades or add to add that type of stuff from on the books. And so you've got to just figure out, you know, where the fit's going to be and when you can make that kind of move. And until that happens, you just kind of got to continue to play it as it is.
And with that, let's go ahead and wrap up this edition of the show. I will say that we won't have a show later this week because, well, among other things, I'm not going to be in town. I'm going to visit my daughter up in Utah. So we've got stuff going on. So we will start our draft shows, unless there's more crap that we have to talk about. Our draft shows start in earnest next week, and kind of the goal over the next 3 weeks after this week is to kind of hit two shows next week, two shows the week after, and then we will have our mock draft show a couple of days before the draft. So that's Seth Cox. This is Jess Root. This is the Rise of Secret Podcast. Thanks for listening. We will be back again next week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red. Whoa!